Welcome to another episode of Inside Flicks. I'm Mike, and I'm here with my brothers, Richard and Raymond. Fellas,
hey there.
Oh, hey.
Real quick, this is a podcast that we created so that we can talk about movies, basically. It also gives us a reason to get together on a weekly basis so that we can have discussions about movies, television shows. This episode is jam-packed with stuff. We're going to review the new Netflix action movie, Extraction. We're also going to review the Apple original documentary, Beastie Boys Story. We're also going to take a look at the classic 1983 teen comedy, Valley Girl, starring a then 18-year-old Nicolas Cage in his first major leading role. So let's begin with Extraction.
This is an extraction.
So who are the players?
Biggest drug lord in India versus biggest drug lord in Bangladesh.
Some mythic shit, huh?
It's a kidnapping. Drug lord's son. Clock's running at 16 hours. Proof of life as of 6 hours ago.
Are you always this brave?
I'm not brave.
You rescue people?
Sometimes. Sometimes to do other things.
Extraction stars Chris Hemsworth as Tyler Rake, a mercenary for hire with a troubled past. He is hired to extract the kidnapped son of an international crime lord in India. This kid was kidnapped by his father's main rival, a crime lord in Bangladesh. Tyler ends up being ambushed and trapped behind enemy lines as the entire city goes on lockdown. To protect the kid and to save his own ass, Tyler must kill his way through a war zone filled with crooked cops, gangsters, assassins, and child soldiers.
Raymond, go ahead. You go first.
I'll start off by saying I think this is actually a big improvement over some of the American action films Netflix has been producing lately. Like the last two action movies I saw on Netflix were Spencer Confidential and Six Underground. And while I think Six Underground had better action than this at times, this is an overall better movie in my opinion. But I still don't think this is really anything very, very particularly special. I think the movie's a bit uneven. I think I have some issues with the action as well, because the action is really good in the movie, but the action at times in this film is like almost like a like on another level. It's not grounded, and a lot of times the movie feels like it wants to be a serious film. It feels like it wants to be grounded. There's certain attention to detail to some things that that I appreciate, but I don't think it quite blends with the action that the movie has. Like a lot of the action in this movie, it's good, but it looks like something that belongs in like one of the Captain America films, like Captain America Civil War. And if I'm not mistaken, I think the director of this film used to be a stunt coordinator on those movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sam Hargrave. He makes his directorial debut with this. Yeah.
And you definitely see that. I just don't know if it quite blends with the attention to detail and the realism of some of the rest of the movie. It's kind of weird. And like, there's one moment in the film pretty early on. It starts off really awesome. It's like this like knife fight and between Chris Hemsworth and this like main dude that he's like fighting throughout the movie. And at one point, you know, I guess minor spoiler, Chris Hemsworth hits him with a truck or something like that, okay. And he goes flying into I think a van or something. He completely dents it and stuff. It's from a small distance, and if I'm not mistaken, they did this exact same thing in I think in Civil War, mm-hmm. with Crossbones.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And you know, when you watch it with superheroes and stuff, it's like this is awesome.
Yeah, it makes
sense.
When
you watch it in like a real life situation, it's just like
that would have killed that person. It would have mangled his body.
It completely pulls me out of the movie. And it doesn't blend well with the realism of the rest of the film.
Because right. That's a good point.
In many ways, the movie looks like it reminded me a lot of this Paul Greengrass film, The Green Zone. But the action is very Captain America, and it's very weird. Like, there's this one moment in the movie when Chris Hemsworth is beating up a bunch of people, and then most of the guys he's going up against are, you know, they're pretty small dudes. It makes sense because, you know, the higher up guys would pay these, like, you know, small, like, street urchins and stuff.
Yeah, it's these kids.
To go do these tasks. But it's just, I'm just watching, like, basically Thor go all superhero out on, like, a bunch of, like, children and stuff. And I kept thinking of the South Park bit of about Russell Crowe. They do this parody about Russell Crowe, like, going around, like, beating up a bunch of people across the world. And I kept thinking of that. And, I don't know. It was completely ridiculous to me. But it's good action.
That pulled you out of the realness of the film.
And that was a constant struggle for me. But it's good action.
Yeah.
It was just a little hard to appreciate because it didn't blend with the movie.
How about you, Rich? Go ahead. You want to say something?
No, you guys go.
Well, Raymond, you said Green Zone?
Yeah, Green Zone, Paul Greengrass.
Okay.
Matt Damon.
I mean, speaking of Matt Damon, this movie reminded me a lot of the Bourne movies to me. And I think the action looked a lot better. A lot better than you did. I mean, this movie was like a breath of fresh air for me for all the movies that I've seen so far in 2020. And sure, the movie has flaws script-wise. I mean, this is based on a comic book itself, so I don't mind it. I mean, it seems like it is a comic book film. And
a comic book that the Russo brothers created.
Co-wrote.
They executive produced this film. And co-wrote the screenplay.
And the director, this new director, I think this guy has got he's just as good as the
John Wick guys?
John Wick guys, to me. Yeah.
I don't know about that, but this is a solid debut.
This is his first debut also. I mean, this is it. I mean, this is a solid debut.
So for you, the bigger issue would be the screenplay.
Sure, but I didn't mind it so much. This is like, to me, it's like a Taken movie. This is like a John Wick movie. I agree with that. It's a simple plot. I mean, it's a simple plot. That's all I need. This is, you know, this is all 90s, I mean, 80s movie. This is all Commando to me. So this is great.
But I guess I would have liked it if it was a bit more Commando, a bit more over the top, and maybe not. Because I don't think the realism and the groundedness in this film quite was matched or was necessary.
Well, I didn't need it to be. I mean, this was just a pleasant surprise to me. I mean, I wasn't expecting much, and I got a great vibe from it. I loved it all the way through. And I thought the acting was really well. I mean, Chris Hemsworth did a great job in this, and...
I kind of agree with Rich here. I liked it. I liked this movie. Especially after watching Six Underground from Michael Bay, which was a movie that I utterly despised. For me, Extraction was at least enjoyable. Look, the film is not going to win any awards for its screenplay.
No,
the plot is paper thin here. It's basically a paper thin version of Logan. Or Man on Fire.
Yes.
And that storyline is kind of like an old favored trope for action in Western movies. So I don't mind it, you know. So Extraction is not deliberately trying to reinvent the wheel here in that sense. It's perfectly happy to supply another take on this kind of time-honored tale of a reluctant hero who must step up to save an innocent from a certain doom. And I think Hemsworth here is very good. He's good at, you know, and this might sound like an insult, but he's good at, like, playing exhausted and ragged. Yet still able to emote, like, sadness and misery and guilt. You know, he actually has an uncanny ability that he can switch from being uncaring and to like, feel deep anguish. And, like, for instance, take a scene in Endgame where we see the introduction of Fat Thor. And one moment he doesn't care, and he doesn't care about anyone or anything. And then they mention the name Thanos, and his face immediately changes, and it becomes overwhelmed with a heartache. And he goes, "Don't say that name," you know. And it feels totally believable. You know, he has a ability to be like fully believable, showing his character's emotions, and that's a rare ability for any actor. And he's like one of the only guys I know, at least in the acting genre, to could really do that. And there's a scene in here where he's talking about his troubled past, and I go, wow, that's some really great action. And I think his ability to act like that makes me forgive the script for its shortcomings. So if I have to compare this to other action movies that came out this year, like Bad Boys for Life, Bloodshot, The Hunt, or like Birds of Prey or something. Well, compared to those movies, I found that this to be a much better action movie. Although I do like Bad Boys. I enjoyed that movie more.
I think Bad Boys is a lot better than this.
I enjoyed that movie more too, but I think Extraction has far more better action sequences. Mm-hmm. And so I will give this a B because I needed some action. I need an action film.
Yeah.
At this time right now. I think if it was any other year, I would maybe say this is a C+, but right now I need a good action movie, and thank God Netflix delivered, because this was a strong action movie.
I also give it a strong B at that, and I'm really hope this is like a Jack Reacher for Chris Hemsworth.
Raymond, what's your grade on this film?
Well, I mean, I hate to sound like a dick, but I mean, to me, this is just like an average 6 out of 10 movie. What I really needed right now is a good movie, and what I still need right now is a really, really, really good movie, and I didn't get that with this. Kind of like, because you needed an action movie right now. Yeah. I need a really good movie, because I've been seeing a lot of like mediocre movies.
Yeah, yeah.
I need something really, really good, and this just didn't cut it. It's just an average, like 6 out of 10 action movie for me. I'd probably maybe be. A bit nicer. I guess I was in need of an action movie right now, but I wasn't in the need of one. This is like a D- for me.
D minus.
What?
Come on,
what?
Man.
D- no.
It's
way.
It's on par with Bloodshot for me.
Oh, but Bloodshot. I would see this movie again over
in
Bloodshot.
A heartbeat. Yeah.
I mean, I kind of dug Bloodshot.
If Bloodshot 2 ever happens, I'd have to watch Bloodshot again.
So, recap here. We got 2 Bs for Extraction. Me and Rich give Extraction B, 2 Bs.
Strong B.
Strong B for Rich. Me, B. And Raymond, who kind of likes the movie, but...
Not really.
Not really at all. Okay. But a D- for him.
I wouldn't watch it again.
Of course.
It's fine. It's
Raymond's
a movie.
He's waiting for a drama that will change his life very soon. I don't know if you're going to get that film this year.
It doesn't have to be a drama. It could be. Look, if I gave John Wick 3 a C-, I think D- is appropriate for this movie.
Let me ask you this. You think the John Wick films are better than this?
Yeah, but I'm more of a combat guy, and I think that movie also lives in a completely fictional, cartoony world in many ways.
Yeah.
I mean, you have like the TikTok, ridiculous stuff.
Well, maybe you'll give Atticus Fitch whatever.
I would have liked this more if they embraced the stupidness, the ridiculousness of everything was on par with the action. If it matched the action, I'd be like, that's cool. But I don't know. This movie tries to be serious, and I don't think it quite blends with the action. I think it's one way or the other.
No, I don't really agree with that, because if this was trying to be more kind of over the top like John Wick, I would, because that was my problem with the John Wick franchise, is it's getting more over the top, more cartoonish, and if this would follow that type of idea, I probably wouldn't like this movie as much. I liked that they kept it kind of grounded. Like, it felt like an old school Tony Scott movie, where it's, Tony Scott's over, his action is all over the place, it's all over the top, but everyone's playing it very serious,
I think Tony Scott movies are total ridiculousness.
Oh, no.
And I'm not talking about it in a negative way. I love Tony Scott's movies, but there may be, I'd say like an intellectual Con Air in many ways or something like that, but it's still Con Air.
Wow,
that's what Extraction should have been.
And I would say that Extraction is an intellectual Con Air. Anyway, me and Rich give it a B, and Raymond gives it a D-. All right, let's get to our next film. I guess it's the Beastie Boys story.
Now here's a little story that I got to tell about three bad brothers that you know so well. It started way back in history with that rock,
MCA,
and me,
Mike D.
Hello, everyone.
What we
we're gonna do right here is go back, way back, back into time.
The Beastie Boys.
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 The Beastie Boys. The Beastie Boys.
Apple's original documentary, Beastie Boys Story. This is Mike Diamond and Adam Horowitz, a.k.a. Mike D and Ad Rocks, the surviving members of iconic New York rap punk band, the Beastie Boys, share their incredible life story of how they started in the music business with their childhood best friend, the late Adam Yauch, a.k.a. MCA. In this recorded live stage show documentary experience directed by longtime friend and award-winning filmmaker Spike Jonze.
Rich, you're a big Beastie Boys fan, right?
Sure, I knew about Beastie Boys, but I really didn't know this much about it. And it was a good documentary from the beginning, and then it fell a little flat for me during the middle, and it ended up being a more of a wake at the end. And but all in all, it was a good documentary. But was it great? No. And it's sort of like a Kevin Smith talk show, whatever stage show.
Yeah.
You know, I enjoyed it. It was good, and I liked the beginning the most.
I think I agree. I suppose this documentary is meant for someone like myself, someone who kind of likes. I like the Beastie Boys. I like their music. Yeah. Someone who's familiar with the musical references, like, and also the people featured in the film. Like, I know who Run DMC is. I know who Rick Rubin is. Russell Simmons, Def Jam, you know, and I know some of the histories around these people, but I really didn't know too much about the history of the Beastie Boys, and I didn't buy their book, which the documentary is based on. So some parts I found really engaged by it. I found it intriguing, but then there are some parts that I felt it was like too drawn out, or the whole thing kind of felt too long, although it was only an hour and like 45 minutes. But I guess because it is a recorded live show of two people talking about their personal stories. So the entertainment value really relies on their ability to tell these stories in a compelling way. So Ad Rock, or Adam Horowitz here, he's a natural public speaker. He's a good storyteller. He comes across as someone who's more comfortable speaking to a live audience, whereas Mike D is more stiff and he's rigid. It's not that he's like awkward. It's that we could tell that he's reading from a script or he's reading from the teleprompter. So his parts feels like a book report. But when Adam starts talking, it feels more naturalistic. You know, and he tells like really funny and sometimes sad stories. So I liked his parts. But then again, then we get the stiffness from Mike D. And I don't know. I think my problem is that director Spike Jonze here, he dropped the ball. I was really expecting something kind of more imaginative, something more creative in the regards of the visuals. But what we got here is kind of like a PowerPoint presentation, you know?
Oh, I see.
Yep.
And so I think that's the thing that could have worked. This could have been a really great kind of experience. All I got was a couple guys on the stage talking about some really cool stories. I don't think that's enough.
I'd say only some of them are cool.
But no, I thought the stuff where they're talking about in the 80s when they were making License to Ill, I thought that was really great. I was interested.
The beginning of the documentary is the best part.
Yeah, it's some parts some parts I really liked and some parts I didn't like that much. You know what it is? I felt in a lot of ways it felt incomplete because MCA is not here. Adam Yauch, who died of cancer in 2012, he's not here with us anymore, unfortunately. And so we can't hear his side of the story. And I think that if this was more of a traditional documentary, I think that they could have really dealt that in a different way, that his part of the story could have been told better. But it was, like I said, it's some parts are interesting, some parts are not interesting. I give this a C plus.
I probably also give it a C plus also. Yeah. Because I don't, it's definitely not a B. Yeah, I'll go with a C plus.
Raymond, what was your review?
I thought this was just pretty standard, and there's no denying when you watch this thing, it would have been really awesome to have been in the audience for this one time event. But I don't know. I mean, kind of like how where you were saying. I mean, when you turn this into a movie, I think you got to do a bit more than just showing us that, because it's not the same experience. I think they did a decent job of almost kind of like recreating what it would have been like to have been there. But for the most part, it kind of just felt like I was watching like a Comic-Con panel. Online on YouTube, or like I was watching a TED Talk or something like that. I thought it was kind of weak. And for that type of an experience, to see it the way we did, I thought it was just way too long.
Especially coming from director Spike Jonze, right? I mean,
yeah. Well, it must have been difficult for him to edit it, but it's just a standard documentary. Not great. I feel like it's something that could have aired on TV.
I think this would have been better if this was more of a traditional documentary, if they didn't go with the live stage audience thing.
And I agree. It was missing something.
Yeah.
And it should have been shorter.
It felt very long.
Their story is pretty, you know, simple for the most part. I don't think it really needed to be that long.
Right. Did you grade this? What's your grade, Raymond?
Oh, my grade? I'm going to sound mean again, but I give this a D.
And my grade C+ was because I do like the music. I do like some of the stories, and that's part of the reason.
Yeah, me too. It's entertaining enough. It starts off really strong, and then it doesn't quite keep it, I think. It doesn't keep that momentum.
Let me ask you this. Do you need to be a Beastie Boys fan to kind of...
I think you need to be a diehard.
Man. I don't think you need to be a diehard, because I'm not a diehard, but I was a fan.
Yeah, but you also just... You recommend people subscribe to Apple Plus right now to check this out?
No.
You have to be a diehard.
Yeah.
Unless if you're already subscribed. That's why I watched it.
Yeah, I think, or at least have a friend who has Apple TV. No, but I mean, I think if you're just like a moderate fan, I think you would enjoy it like I did. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, no, I enjoyed it too. I've seen a lot of ways you could have made it better. Yeah. I mean, one of them simply by trimming it. And yeah, I think they did. Yeah, they definitely needed to do more than, you know, just to present the live performance.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
Totally agree. So just to recap, Rich, you give this a what?
C+.
So we both give this a C+, and Raymond says a D.
If you're the type of person that, you know, constantly is like watching interviews with these guys online on YouTube, this was made for you.
But don't you think they know the stories already?
No, but just because this is just hanging out with the guys.
Oh, that's
for
true.
2 hours.
Good point. All right, that was our reviews of this week. Next up, we're going to take a look at Valley Girl.
Okay, so he's awesome.
Valley Girl.
She's out there somewhere.
This is the story of a boy from Hollywood who never dreamed the girl he'd want most was down here.
I'll stop the world.
Hello.
Hello. Who invited you?
Oh, wow, you mean you have to be invited? Well, that explains it.
What?
Well, everyone is dressed for it. See, if I had been invited, I wouldn't know this was a costume party.
Right.
It's the story of a girl from the valley who never dreamed she'd ever be seen with a boy from over here.
It's like I'm not getting out of this car.
All right, but when they attack the car, save the radio.
Julie's cool. Randy's hot. She's from the valley. He's not. Valley Girl.
All right, so for some reason, Valley Girl has never been available on digital platforms until this past week. And maybe it has something to do with the fact that there's a new musical remake coming out soon on VOD in early May.
Orion Pictures.
Yes, that's right. So I go, what a perfect time to revisit Valley Girl and take a look at its history and see how much it holds up, how much it doesn't hold up. Also, Raymond here, this is the first time he ever watched this movie, so I would like to hear what he has to say about this. You know, for me, watching this again after so many years, the movie does feel like an old movie. It feels like a time capsule in a way. Valley Girl, for those who don't know, it's a 1983 film. It's like a cult classic teen romance comedy. I guess it's best known as Nicolas Cage's first major leading role, right, Rich?
Yeah, and this is his first role as Nicolas Cage. This is
because he had a small part in Fast Times at Ridgemont High, where he was credited as Nicholas Coppola, and then for this movie, this was his first time credited as Nicolas Cage. This also starred Deborah Fortman. She was a 80s horror girl. She was in April Fool's Day and Waxwork. Like Nicolas Cage, this was like her first movie. And I guess the film is loosely based on Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet. It's a kind of that story about two star-crossed lovers from different worlds. Here we got a punk rocker named Randy, who falls madly in love with Julie, a valley girl.
So you want to dance?
In another life.
Yeah, I didn't either. I was just taking a poll.
Oh, Fred, you know you were this good.
Well, at least I'm trying.
You know what, is this points for effort? I told you this place was going to be a waste.
Yeah, this place sucks.
Well, well.
What?
Hot, very hot.
All right, which way?
Like you're staring right at us. Gross, let's move. Wait, let's see what happens.
Oh, sure. Tell me all about it. I'm gonna talk with Ralph.
Bad luck, Fred. Yours is leaving.
Hey, what do you mean mine's leaving?
She winked at you, didn't she?
She did?
Yeah, don't let her get away. Hello.
I don't know, Rich. You recently rewatched this. What was your thoughts?
I saw it on cable maybe like 3-4 years ago. It's still, you know, kind of fresh in my mind still. Mm-hmm. It holds up. I mean, to me, I mean, it's a great bounce back to the nostalgia, and I'm just glad they didn't say gag me with a spoon.
Oh.
I mean, they did say gag. I think I remember saying gag once.
Do you remember this at all? Because you're a little bit older than us.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
when it first came out in theaters, though, in 1983?
Yeah. Maybe. It was 83?
1983,
wow.
Yeah. Wow. It's the same year that...
I probably don't. I do remember it in home video, though.
Okay. It's the same year that Risky Business came out.
Yeah.
Just to give you an idea of the decade. 1982 was Fast Time at Ridgemont High. Square Pigs also came out that year, that series. Last American Virgin was also in 82. And then Valley Girl, 83. 84, and the rest of the decade is John Hughes. We got 89, Say Anything. And when I was rewatching the film, I didn't realize how much Say Anything vibe.
Yeah.
Because I think Randy, which is Nicolas Cage's character, is very much... or is very similar to John Cusack's Lloyd Dobler. They're both kind of like puppy dogs. They're kind of stupid, but loyal, and they both kind of fall in love with the suburban girl. Rich, what was your take on when rewatching the film?
I remember the music holds up the most, probably. It was good to see Nicolas Cage starting off, and his puppy dog eyes, I mean, were really young back then. Yeah. and Deborah Foreman, who never went on, I don't think she did that much, you know, afterwards.
No, just it was a couple of projects, mostly a couple horror movies. And then she reunited with the director, Martha Coolidge, on Real Genius. Yeah, and I want to say the cinematographer for Valley Girl is this guy named Frederick Elms. And he went on to work closely with directors David Lynch, Ang Lee, and Jim Jarmusch. He did Blue Velvet after this movie. Uh-huh. The movie before this was, he worked on Eraserhead. just some really fun facts real quick. The budget was about $325,000.
It was
a low budget movie.
Yeah.
The music soundtrack was $150,000 on top of that budget. Martha Coolidge only got paid at $5,000. The box office, it made $17.3 million. The director, Martha Coolidge, she was working on a rock and roll love story for Francis Ford Coppola's American Zoetrope. Mm-hmm. But the production company went under, and that film project ultimately died. But that preparation for that film helped for her on Valley Girl, especially on the soundtrack. And because
well, they couldn't they couldn't even afford another artist for the poster, I think, because if you look at the original poster, that is clearly not Deborah Foreman. That is Michelle Pfeiffer.
They say actress. It's the girl that he hooks up with in the bar, in the nightclub scene.
But I also heard that Michelle Pfeiffer was offered the role first, and she.
That's true.
So that might have just been a concept idea. Yeah, a concept.
Nicolas Cage was the last person to be cast in this film. He was while casting Randy, the director Coolidge got really frustrated because they were only interviewing pretty boys, as she said it, and so she walked over to the table, looked through the rejected pile of male actors, then she was looking over the headshots. She pulled one out and says, "Get me more guys that look like this," and it was the headshot of Nicolas Cage. She didn't know that Nicolas Cage was Francis Ford Coppola's nephew. So when she picked him, Cage said, "I can't do it," because he said he was doing a bit part on Rumblefish. Mm. He couldn't do it. It was a scheduled conflict. And Martha Coolidge went up to Nicolas Cage and goes, "Don't worry about it. I know Francis Ford personally. I was working on this other project for him." And she goes, "Don't worry about it. This movie's going to make you a star." And so she called up Francis's people, and he goes, "I need to work out this schedule thing because Nicolas Cage, I want him for my movie." And they go, "We don't have a Nicolas Cage, but we do have a Nick." And then he goes, "What? What do you mean? We got a Nick Coppola." And that's when she realized that they were related. But researching the film was pretty fun.
And watching it again, it was good to see Frederick Forrest, who was also in Apocalypse Now.
Her connection with Francis Ford, with America's Zoetrope.
But what was really cool watching it the other day is to see that Tony Plata was the lowrider, the cholo guy, at the very end. That's gotta be Tony Plata.
Yep, it was.
Just looking. Oh my god.
Yeah, it was fun. I mean, yes, I would say compared to like the John Hughes films of that time, I always thought Valley Girl was much like darker. And when I rewatched the film, I go, no, this is a very simple, sweet movie. And I was really impressed by Cage's performance in the film because this was before all that stuff that he is, before he was the madman, before the Cage rage, right? He was still, you could tell that he's still working out his craft. Raymond, I'm interested. This is your first time watching it. I'm interested in what you have to say. What's your thoughts on Valley Girl?
I thought it was okay. I thought it was a very standard movie. I was a little let down by it. I think you mentioned earlier that this it was inspired by Romeo and Juliet. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and another movie that was inspired by Romeo and Juliet's John Travolta film Grease. And I actually kind of felt this was kind of like Grease mixed with Fast Times. And I personally thought it wasn't quite as good as either one. I mean, those are two classics, but I mean, I thought this was a fairly average movie. I think the best thing about it is absolutely the soundtrack. It's got a great playlist. And while watching it, I was like, you know what? It makes a lot of sense that they would make a remake of this that's geared towards like preteen kids. That's a musical, because this movie, like the best part of the movie is the music.
Yeah, that's what I said. Yeah,
I agree.
It kind of makes sense. I mean,
I would say like compare this to other '80s films, I think this probably has the best soundtrack. I mean, it had that song, "The Fanatic." I'm the Fanatic, which was a great hit that no one really played back.
Last American Version had a pretty great soundtrack as well. But this is better. This is a better soundtrack.
They had "I Will Melt With You" from who's that from, Rich?
Modern English?
It's a constant jukebox. Yeah. I mean, there's like multiple songs throughout a scene, but they're all good. It's all good music.
Yeah, it has a English beat. Or no. "Mirror in the Bathroom." No, not "Mirror in the Bathroom." It had
"Men at Work."
Yeah, what was that song?
Actually, was "Who Can It Be Now?"
I think it was "Who Can It Be Now." It had an Eddie Grant song that,
yeah, "Electric."
Yeah, it had really great. I mean, I was shocked at how many hits they had in the film. But to your point, Raymond, you know, the reason why it feels like kind of a cheesy, you know, cheesy teen comedy thing, because it was supposed to be like this cheesy teen comedy. The producers wrote the idea. Well, first of all, the idea of the Valley Girl became a hit. It became an idea after this hit, "Valley Girl," from Frank Zappa. "She's a Valley Girl." Rich, remember this?
Hell no. I don't like
Okay, I'm going to sing it. Valley girl. She's a valley girl. Valley girl.
You don't have to sing it.
She's a valley girl.
I never liked Frank Zappa.
It's not, but it was a hit. It was like everywhere.
All right, let me play
it. Oh, yeah, Frank look Zappa. It up. Look it up on anything. Valley. Let me, no, I'll just sing it. Valley girl. She's a valley girl. It goes like this. Valley girl. She's a valley girl.
Like, oh my gosh. Yeah. Okay.
So that's from Frank Zappa. And the girl is Moon Zappa, his daughter. And she was like around 14 years old when she sang that song, right? And that became such a cultural hit, pop hit, that producers in Hollywood say, oh, let's make a TV show or let's do a movie. And they were approaching Frank Zappa to produce something. And then these guys, the producer and Valley Girl, started doing their own project. And Frank Zappa tried to sue them to from releasing the movie. He was unsuccessful, but you know it was a thing because of that pop hit. And there were the movie itself wasn't trying to be serious, or it wasn't even trying to be a movie. They really was just trying to monetize on this cultural phenomenon, the Valley Girl phenomenon, and. Okay. Even the producers who set up the deal with Martha Coolidge, the requirement here was that she needed to film at least 4 breast scenes, and she agreed because she thought she could change the script. I think she rewrote the script, and when they did the first test screening for the producers, they go, "Oh my God, this is actually a real movie." They were surprised that that she made a real movie out of their concept.
Actually, I think that actually makes a lot of sense, because when I was watching this movie, one of the issues I had with it is that there's all these like R-rated stuff. Like there's like a lot of like, you know, I'm not a prude at all. You know, I like Gaspar Noé films, but there's sex scenes in this movie. There's nudity. There's cursing, there's all this stuff, and none of it feels genuine to me. It felt very forced. Mm. And actually, I'm glad that you say this, because when I was watching the movie, I felt like this movie was just, like they wrote a regular teen movie, and then they saw how successful Fast Times was the year before, and they were like, oh, let's just throw some nudity, let's throw some cursing, and I was like, oh man, this is such a lazy script, but it turns out, well, maybe it's half truth. The producers tried to turn it into like I guess not even Fast Times. They tried to turn it into Porky's, right?
Yeah, some like sex comedy, teen sex comedy. That's what.
Yeah, they wanted it to be like Porky's or Last American Virgin, and that's not really what the movie is. But actually, if I'm being honest, I kind of like Last American Virgin more than this movie.
What you thought of Nicolas Cage?
It's a good performance. Mm-hmm. But for me it was slightly disappointing, because this is like his breakthrough performance. This is the movie that kind of made him famous. But when you look at like some of the great, you know, and odd and bizarre performances that he's given throughout the years, this was a little tame. I think my favorite.
I think the most bizarre thing in this movie from him was his chest hair. Like, coming out of the beach, looked like he had a seaweed stuck to his chest.
The director Martha Coolidge wanted him to shave his chest.
I agree.
And he came up with the triangle thing. It was his, but that was his idea to have that upside down triangle thing.
He actually shaved that.
Yeah, he did. That was on purpose.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I think my favorite moment of Nicolas Cage though in this movie, there is a tiny piece when the wild Cage, you know, breaks loose and kind of slips out, and it gives you a little tease of what's to come years later in the future, or, you know, not even that far in the future, but what's to come next. Yeah. And there's a moment where he has to, you know, act drunk. I mean, his character's drunk. Yeah. And then I think he's like walking past a bar, right?
Yeah.
There's a bodyguard right there. And Nick Cage just walks up to him, and, you know, he pretends like he's going to punch him in the face, and he doesn't. And he just ends up like screaming at him. And
ready?
Hey, how you doing?
You know,
you've been doing
doing good? All right, that's what I want.
It's extremely over the top and ridiculous. And it's like, yeah, that's Nick Cage. I wanted more of that in his breakout performance.
We see him trying these things. He's still,
I know. I get it. He's young. He's cast in a typical rom com.
He's only 18 in his time.
I know, I know. But it's fun that you get to see a tiny piece of it slip.
Yeah, there. I'll say there's like when he says, you know, your face. Is this movie in 3D? No, your face is.
No, but your face.
Yeah, that was all him. That's him making that stuff up.
Oh, and he improved that line?
Yeah, he made up that line. And there was a scene where he goes, we had the gum, the chewing gum, and he goes, pepper, you know, and the chewing gum comes out.
It appears as though you forgot our french fries and our Coke. Fishhead.
Oh, well, Peter Piper picked a pepper. I guess I did. I'm sorry.
That's nuts. What a geek.
And so that was all him making that stuff up on the fly. That's what I liked about the movie. I think that's what I took away from watching the movie again, that Nicolas Cage was this innocent guy still working out his craft and working out his performance. And I found that in itself was very sweet. And also, I didn't realize how good Deborah Foreman was. She's actually really good in this movie. And it's almost tragic that she didn't become a bigger star. There's some parts that doesn't hold up. It feels very dated. I didn't realize like the graduate stuff. Like there's a Miss Robertson kind of subplot.
Yeah, then that also felt like that was forced in for the R rating,
right?
Or like one of the boobs that had to be included. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, to get it greenlit.
Even the ending of this film is straight out from The Graduate. You know, they're both looking. They're both driving away. Yeah. I mean. It's not a perfect film, but
I had a much bigger issue with how just kind of one-dimensional and stocky the characters were. Again, mostly because we got Fast Times the year before. Mm-hmm. The performances, I agree, are all pretty good, but I feel like the only character in this movie that kind of had some pretty good dialogue and was well written was Frederick Forrest's character, one of the only adults in the movie. I thought he was like the actual character that was actually kind of believable.
There was a really
good everyone, all the kids. I felt like the writer of this movie didn't know how to write teenagers.
I think they said the script.
I'm sorry, man. I have to be honest.
I think they said the script was written in 14 days.
Makes sense. Yeah.
The scene you're talking about, Frederick Forrest. When he's talking to his daughter, played by...
He's got a couple good scenes.
Yeah. Actually, his character, he's like this hippie guy who's now a father.
He felt like he belongs in a different movie.
But there's a scene where he's talking to his daughter, who played by Deborah Foreman. I thought that was very kind of sweet. And I see a little bit of 16 Candles in that. Because that scene was almost exactly like in 16 Candles when...
I didn't realize that at first, but you're totally right about that.
Yeah.
What difference does it all make? The way you look, the kinds of clothes you wear on your body, it's what you are that counts. What's inside you, what you stand for, not what other people want to make you. You see, honey, there are lots of people out there who just ain't happy unless you live and think the same way they do. And if you don't, you dig what I'm saying?
I know all about that stuff. But, like, which one do I pick?
Oh, Randy or Tommy. Beats me, love. But let me know when you decide.
All right, Rich, real quick, what's your thoughts on the musical remake that's coming out in a couple weeks or so?
It's an outrage. It's something that should never exist.
Really?
You saw
the trailer, though?
Yeah. I almost puked.
When I first saw the trailer, I go, oh, now I know how like 50s greasers thought of Grease when it first came out. Like if I was like a rebel greaser back in the day in the 50s and 60s, and then I went to the movie theaters and saw a trailer for Grease, that's exactly how I feel watching, not that I'm from the 80s or, you know, it just feels like, oh, wow, they...
You I mean no the cartoony, unbelievable 80s, that the exaggerated 80s? Well, I think there's a lot of that in. I think there's a lot in Valley Girl in the movie. It's a very, very 80s movie. I think one of the best aspects about the film that it's this time capsule, right?
Yeah, it is.
And it's this time capsule because it's filled with all the pop culture. It's filled with all the clothes. It's filled like in every frame. Like it's super like 80s. Like I compared to like other 80s comedies, like you know, all the John Hughes films or, you know, Fast Times and stuff, Porky's. This really sticks out like an 80s movie.
Yeah, it does.
And the best part about the movie is the soundtrack.
I think we all could agree the soundtrack is the best part.
Yeah, so I actually think it kind of makes a lot of sense to make this into a musical. Look, I have no interest in seeing it. The target audience for this musical is clearly like 12-year-old kids. Yeah,
but would you know what I mean? Would they even know what Valley Girl is?
Why even use Valley Girl? Yeah, I mean, why bring in the 80s?
I think of all the 80s properties you could come up with, this is the one that makes the most sense to do it for. Should they be doing this? Probably not, but I think you guys are probably the two people that are most offended. No. I know there's some people mad in line. The trailer has a lot of like dislikes, but I mean, not as many as I was kind of expecting, I guess.
It's not that I was
I think it's fine.
It's not that I was a hardcore Valley Girl fanboy, because I wasn't. I just thought it was a really kind of cool cult hit that I haven't seen for many years. I thought there was a good opportunity to...
It
was a small movie. Kind of. I thought there was a cool opportunity to revisit it and check it out again. It's now available on all the digital platforms, iTunes.
It's been on Blu-ray for, I think, 2 years from Shout Factory in case anybody's interested in that.
So I wanted to hear your opinion on it. I wanted to see what Richard thought rewatching it. And there you go. That's it. A simple look back at what was a cult classic in the 80s. Well, Endis was saying thank you for listening to Inside Flicks. Keep safe, everyone. Keep healthy out there. Take care of yourselves. Take care of your family members. And we'll be back with another episode really soon. Thank you for listening. This is Inside Flicks. All right. Bye-bye. It goes like this. Valley Girl. She's a Valley Girl.